Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six! Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Who? YouTube Live! Let's go! What's up? Welcome all to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. A timely collaboration. Yep, vapes out for McDaniel. Timely collaboration in store today, folks. I was going to say us three Aussies. Jack's just had a situational meltdown. Al and I are joined by one half of the... Oh, we got both! Oh, yeah. Both. Right on time.
Timing. Absolute timing.
We get the gentleman from the Powder Keg podcast. It's Carl and Ryan. Thanks for joining us, lads. What's going on?
Oh, we made it.
It's so good. Good to see Kyle, too. Oh, my God. First podcast since the new arrival. So, yeah. It's a big event. Big event.
And as you can see, I was totally unprepared. I'm not using my camera. I'm using broken old headphones because all my equipment needs to be tested and reprogrammed and whatnot. Here we are.
Good time for recalibration, Kyle. That's all good. Thanks for joining us. We've got Jack too. And thanks to all the TDU crew out there on YouTube joining us live today. Appreciate your tuning in. Be sure to leave us comments and questions as we go. We'll do our best to interact with them as the show goes on. So we've got a few of you already. Keep them rolling in, guys. Cheers. Massive. This is the first show for both of us, I guess, since the big news has dropped. Wholesale changes, like 10 head coaches changing in the NFL, which is like tied since 2022, I think. And with that comes a lot of coordinators, a former head coach, now offensive coordinator of the Chargers, is Mike McDaniel. And Ryan, I'll throw to you first, man, because there's so many facets. I will say quickly, if you guys get the time after the show, check out on stormcloud.blog Ryan's massive piece on Mike McDaniel. It's an awesome read, and hopefully we'll tuck into a little bit of everything that you've got on that with this chat here, because how are you feeling, man?
Check out Ryan's massive piece is all I heard.
Don't hashtag that. You'll end up on the wrong side of Twitter.
We got our first dick joke. 3 minutes. We made it 3 minutes. Boy.
new record. Man, I'm excited about the Mike McDaniel hire, mainly because it means I was wrong. So in our private chat, Fred, between the five of us, I was adamant we would never get him, and I don't think it would be a good fit. I don't think Harbaugh would be brave enough to be pragmatic and think outside the box. And Kyle, the ever positive American being that he is, told me, "Why don't you dream a little? Why don't you just expand out?" And I'm like, "I'm an oppressed British guy who just used to just like I support." The Reading, miserable. Chargers, miserable. So that's just my sporting experience is just pessimism. So it's fantastic to be proved wrong in a very good way. What a hire. I mean, you guys must be as excited as I am.
Yeah, jump in, anyone. Please, yeah, absolutely. Don't hold back on your excitement.
McDaniel was one of the guys that I was really hoping we'd reach for, but I know everybody felt that way, right? The only people that didn't feel that way were people like you, Ryan, that were just like, schematically, that's not the way Harbaugh goes, which is totally understandable and makes sense. But for me personally, it was the marriage of the run game that I thought could attract Jim, because as much as McDaniel is known for his flash with his, you know, Tyreek Hill and Waddle routes and explosive plays, how well do the running backs do, no matter who he plugs in? That offense in Miami was built off the run, and you can see it. And I think that's really where, besides their love of football and debating over what is the most effective pair of pants to wear, where the, you know, harmony comes between the guys, where they can really connect.
Yeah. I mean, like, this this, let's call it what I think it is. It's the most exciting moment for Chargers fans for about 15 years to think that they have an offensive play caller who has a fair claim to being top five in the league. Hey, I've been looking in the cupboard what I'm going to wear today to channel Mike McDaniel. I don't have a $12,000 Bottega Veneta woven leather jacket. I've just got this number and this hat. So I've brought the vape. I'm pretty pumped up. I think this team now is officially in their Super Bowl window. We have a coach, a lot of us, let's be conservative, a top 10 head coach, a top 10 quarterback, top five quarterback, a top 10 offensive play caller. We've just lost a top 10 defensive play caller, but we still have that top 10 defensive unit. So I don't know, I'll throw to you to start, Jack. Mike McDaniel got on a podium, spoke for 40 odd minutes. I know that that would have got you excited, really diving into his personality. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. The X's and O's aside, this is one of the first times I can remember listening to a person from the Chargers organization and actually quite connecting with them a lot. Obviously, Staley was there and things, but McDaniel's standing up there talking about Rome and ancient history and being at Yale, educated. He's making a little, he really sort of comes into his own in that 40 minutes. After about 10 or 15 minutes, he starts, gets a little more comfortable, makes some jokes about himself. It was a teachable moment. It was amazing. It was really, really cool. So, and you know, there's one thing that I can't remember Justin Herbert really ever talking about, and maybe I'm mistaken, but it was his relationship with Greg Roman. What I'd love to see with Mike McDaniel and Justin is when they, either of them stand up, you're going to get it from McDaniel, obviously, because he just put a lot of plaudits onto Justin Herbert talking about how great he is. But at the same way, he's kind of also saying, yeah, but Justin Herbert needs help too. I need to get the ball out quicker. You know, I need to help him out. It'd be great, and this is kind of that relationship we're talking about. They're kind of awkward guys a little bit different. Is that if they can build up a really trusting relationship. I don't think this is going to be a five-year thing. 24 months, I reckon, at tops before he might go on and become a head coach, Mike McDaniel, that is. But I think whilst we've got him, it's the perfect time in Justin Herbert's career to take him to that next step. But for me personally, he's just a great hire. He's a great personality, Andy. And it's just like super exciting. I've got a smile on my face, even though we only put up 3 points not that long ago.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And at Ben Hubert one with the weird infinity gauntlet of weird personalities, I think that's spot on. I didn't expect it to work personality-wise, scheme-wise, well, sort of to meld into a professional relationship. But man, I've always loved him in the media and obviously what he does on the football field, and it's so exciting. And there was a couple of sideswipes in the press conference alluding to, you know, going as far as what he had to work with at quarterback in Miami and how Herbert has been held back so far to say that, you know, through 6 years, what we've seen isn't nearly the ceiling. Like, it's really exciting and he's a pretty clear cut guy. Like, he speaks, he's very like transparent with how he speaks. And I don't think he's saying that, I don't think he's saying puffery just for the sake of it. I think he truly believes that with him and Herbert together, get Slater and Alt back, of course, and everything else that needs to happen offensively. And yeah, it's kind of scary and super exciting. And typical getting lulled into the Chargers void of optimism. But I kind of agree with you, Al. I think of all the times of the last few years where we've felt like the team's going in the right direction, and it's been proven back-to-back 11 and 6 wins, winning seasons, now is sort of the closest that it's been to an actual contention window kind of area, or has the potential to be. So really great.
The other element of it as well, Andy, is the what it says about Harbaugh. Like, that, let's not undersell that. This is someone who, to the best of our knowledge, he's met a handful of times at owners' meetings, and we associate Harbaugh with a downhill, gap-centric or gap-heavy running scheme. We were all saying, oh, this fit maybe doesn't work. And really, this has told us, I think, Harbaugh just wants to win, and this is what makes him such a special coach. We'll get to it with Chris O'Leary. He is prepared to take risks if he thinks it's what he needs to get ahead of his competition. And I think we really needed something like this, just to shake things up, just to show that maybe some of the mirrored concepts in the passing game and run, milking clock might not be wholly up to speed with where the NFL has gone, with some of the pattern match coverages, Ryan, being prepared to try and get ahead of the curve, for me is really exciting. I want to throw a quick one to both of you, Ryan, Kyle. I don't mind who jumps in, but there are so many positive things we can say about McDaniel. Ryan has written a lot of them in his article on StormCloud. Just for the listeners, I'm going to say the two main criticisms I've heard, and I want to be, I'm interested in your takes if either of them are valid. The first criticism you hear is the one from Rich Eisen on the Rich Eisen Show, who's a Jets fan. And he basically says, look, in the AFC East, his record with Miami was only 12 and 12. They were 2-7 against Buffalo. And when they got to the playoffs, December and January football, they came unstuck. Buffalo beat them in the wild card round in 2022. The Chiefs beat them 26-7 in 2023. This offense couldn't get over the hump when it mattered. Was that play calling? And the second criticism comes more from your former quarterbacks like Kurt Warner and JT O'Sullivan. They say that this timing-based offense forcing dangerous throws between defenders in the middle of the field, since it attacks the middle of the field so much, is very much relying on the QB trusting his play call on what he sees. And sometimes with Tua, we saw that blind trust lead to untimely interceptions because a linebacker will get a tip or a safety will bite down and pick off one of those intermediate dig routes.
Ryan, maybe you can... What's going on here?
What do you think? What do you think about those two?
I got to defer this to Ryan, man. Ryan, take it away.
Wasn't it me? So two things.
Obviously, two parts to that question. The first answer is that I think there is such a different responsibility between an offensive play caller and an offensive play calling head coach. And in terms of his playoff games, they didn't necessarily score enough points to win, from my memory. But for me, it comes down to the fact you've got to take something off his plate. Going through his scheme, going through all of his tape, and it's clear how much he puts on his own brain every single week. He has to know every single component of how it's meeting because it's impossible for anyone else to know that, right? So if he's doing that and trying to be a head coach, trying to manage the clock, trying to manage his staff, understanding what the defensive strategy is going to be in the second half, you know, worried about special teams, like all of these things piling on top of him, he cannot be that cerebral guy who's making adjustments at halftime to the degree that he needs to. And it's playoff football when he's going to meet his matches in terms of other thinkers of that nature. So that's where I think of, like, you know, the comments from Rich Eisen are based. And in terms of scheme, he does make it, as I said, he does make it very easy on people. But that's because that's the quarterback he was limited with. And yes, they extended him because... Well, it's silly, but all Chargers fans know they shouldn't have extended him. Not at those costs, anyway. But he dealt with what he had, and he had two extremely fast players, which, by the way, they recruited after Tua. Yeah, they brought them in after Tua. So they did that to enable him to be part of that executing Shanahan offense. But every single Shanahan coach will tell you they want the quarterback like Justin Herbert. They've just never been able to get it. Look at what they pay for Trey Lance. Failed, like, you know, sorry, the 49ers. So, like, they've been trying to force it, but this is probably why Mike McDaniel jumped at the opportunity, right? Because he has this. And I think the scheme is going to change. It won't be so much time and base throws across the middle, because actually it's not what Herbert excels at. He's not great at decelerating the ball over the middle to dip down over the linebacker in front of the safety. He wants to hit holes at 1,000 miles an hour. And that is going to have it. Al, don't you dare. And I think he's going to have the opportunity to do that. And Mike McDaniel is clever enough to get that out of him as well. So I feel like all the negative comments in February, or end of January at least, have amazingly positive answers. What we're actually going to see is obviously probably going to be completely different than what I expect.
And Al, if I could build off that with a direct example that Charger fans can relate to, I don't think the Saints were looking at Staley's time as our head coach as their kind of measuring stick for what he could do for them as a coordinator. We saw Staley come here, really struggle tying everything together after having an amazing outing as the Rams defensive coordinator. We see him go to the Saints. And as you've pointed out multiple times this season, he did a lot better in that role than he ever did for us with a less talented team and a way less talented offense, right? Which does matter as a defensive coordinator. So with Mike McDaniel, yeah, I've kind of mentioned this to you guys in our group chat. My biggest complaint with him, and I think it does play into that playoff, those playoff issues that he has, is building that culture, that kind of lackadaisical attitude that he has in front of the press. It just does not strike me as what you would want in front leading your team. Maybe if you had a quarterback that was a Tom Brady type that could lead the team on his own and you just needed a genius calling the plays, maybe. But thank you, Ben. Parents, sleeplessness be damned. You can hear it in my voice too, right? But he, you know, between not having real leaders in that locker room and needing to be the leader himself, that's too much to put on his plate. I'd almost put Mike McDaniel in the category of somebody that in the long run might be one of those coordinators that his ceiling is an amazing coordinator. He'll probably get another head coaching opportunity, but if that doesn't go well, hopefully the door is still open for him here.
Yeah. I'll push back on that a little bit, Kyle, because I think you're right that McDaniel does have, he's quite young still. He does have that personality that perhaps is not what an organization needs, especially somewhere like Miami that was kind of floundering a little bit, had Tua at the quarterback position. However, if you go and meet someone, if you met Harbaugh 20 years ago, 25 years ago, Harbaugh's an odd cat, right? He's very strange. It's just the fact that he's had a lot of time to mature and, you know, learn the ropes and things like that. And maybe this was just a natural progression for McDaniel to go and learn from a pretty kooky head coach CEO type, right? We know McDaniel has been in almost every single offensive room, you know, in, you know, tight end room, offensive line room, quarterback, like all that kind of stuff. He knows his X's and O's. He probably has maybe another 5 to 10 years of trying to figure out who he is as a coach. I do believe that he is reflective enough and he's astute enough with the way that he sees himself, because he takes the mick out of himself, or take the piss, or he makes fun of himself quite a lot. So I think he's very aware of the shortcomings that he has. So I might push back and say that I still think he is head coach material. Maybe this is why he's found and he's chosen LA, is because he can sit with Harbaugh for 24 months or however long and learn how to be a little bit more of that CEO type, harness his personality for good, I guess. Not that necessarily he harnessed his personality for evil in Florida. But yeah, so that's where I see it. And that's one of the benefits of having the CEO coach, right? Kyle, I did want to put something back on you. Alistair alluded to a really good point before that Harbaugh surprised him. You're a San Diegan. Have the Spanos family surprised you? Because they are doing everything. My question to you is, they want to win a Super Bowl. That's how I see it. I don't think I could criticize a move over the last 3 to 4 years without saying that actually they're really wanting to win. How are you feeling? How's that? There's always going to be a rivalry between San Diego and LA. What's that feeling like now?
There were actually some radio stations and podcasters that were very anti-Chargers post the move that are all of a sudden, when the playoffs were coming around, kind of trying to extend a little olive branch. I would say, they are executing the script I would have prayed for a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. You guys know I was like, when they were talking about hiring Sean Payton, I was like, why the hell would you hire Sean Payton when Jim Harbaugh's out there? You know, because people wanted them to try it. I think they wanted to try to trade for Sean Payton because he was still technically under contract for the Saints or whatever. And I was like, that makes no sense. Just go out and sign Jim. And now that they've done Jim Harbaugh, Mike McDaniel was someone I was really hoping for. I'm feeling really good right now personally. And yeah, I'm very impressed that the Spani have done that. I am The only thing, guys, the only thing, because I gotta be a little critical in some way. I am wondering if some of the things that we attributed to Tom Telesco were more John Spanos. And I'm specifically looking at Trey Pipkins going, what were you doing on our roster last year? If they were so quick to go to another swing tackle over him, trying to figure him out, I can't figure out if we were wrong in assuming that that was Tom Telesco's guy or if it was really John's guy. And John still does have a voice in there. But that's if I'm being hypercritical, guys. I really think the Spanos family is doing much better. You know, feelings about the move and all that aside, that those still linger for sure. And there's always going to be that LA rivalry, but it does seem like they are trying to win back the San Diego fan base. There's no denying that Jim Harbaugh has San Diego ties. And for the first time, I think ever this year, they released an entire collection of gear that was reminiscent of their San Diego years. And none of it had LA or Los Angeles verbiage on it. If you guys noticed that. So that's something that I think was a smart move by them. It's something I want to get some more of that gear personally, because as a San Diego Padres fan, it's rough wearing Los Angeles gear, but that's neither here nor there. Cool. But yeah, great question though, Jack. Great question. Mm-hmm. Nice. And sorry, yeah, are we sliding into question time now where we're going back and forth? Are we still breaking things down?
No, we'll talk Chris O'Leary shortly, but it would be wild just on the Spanos. And I don't know, what do you guys think? Is it seems like there's a lot of agreement in the pluralization of Spanos to Spani. It's a hot topic in the chat, which is good to see. It'd be wild for them to move and commit to LA and then not double down and just ultra invest. And that seems to be what they're doing. So they're coming to the table and nothing but props to them for that. Anything further on Mike McDaniel? Guys, Al, you got anything else you want to touch on? Obviously, the conversations around McDaniel will run rampant throughout the next season and beyond.
Maybe, Ryan, just for two minutes, for the people who haven't read it.
I was just going to say, just quickly, Gospel made good comment. How long is Jim Harbaugh going to coach for? You know, maybe this is like a shoe-in kind of situation. Who knows?
Stole my question. Right there. Yeah. I had it loaded for later.
One of the three you wrote down. Back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
Sorry, Al, as you were.
No worries. I was just going to say, Ryan, for those who haven't read your article, can you give maybe a 1-minute spiel for anyone listening who's interested more in what are the characteristics you see from tape of a Mike McDaniel offense and what you're expecting in LA? Like, do we have the speed threats he needs? Scott Matlock as a fullback. Like, talk a bit about his scheme quickly.
Stretch,
not Scott Matlock. That's his entire scheme. he will not be playing fullback. I can pick that out there now. All right. So I did think this might come up. So I tried to put in an elevator pitch summary. So basically, you've got the Shanahan scheme, which is the run looks exactly like the pass. Looks exactly like the play action. They have similar formations, same personnel, and they run similar motions within that scheme. Mike McDaniel has taken it to the next level. He doesn't look at making the run look like the pass, look like the play action. He makes the small actions between them look like the same for all of them. So your insert motion from this, he'll be able to do that. That's when you run one of your players, like Trey Harris, off the X spot. He motions in and then he goes through the B gap, the B or the C gap, to run a route or block. And it looks the same whether he's doing a jet motion, whether he's running a route, whether they're doing a lead blocking. It all looks the same. And he makes those microcosms really difficult to plan for, because these are the type of things that linebackers actually key off of. They go, this triggers their memory when they're doing defensive film study. So he does that from condensed splits. And the screens all look the same because of those cute little things. But the key thing is they're not gimmicks. Everything is planned meticulously. They practice motions the same way everyone else does routes, and they all know their jobs. Another characteristic, they all use the same personnel, as in, like, they will rarely change personnel out of their base package between 21 and 12 personnel. And every single person on the field matters, and every single person on the field has a detail. That sounds very complicated for the players. You think Greg Roman had a 785-page playbook, and we saw the same 15 concepts over and over. So what does Mike McDaniels look like? It's probably simpler, if anything, because they have to know their job really well. Mike McDaniel puts the pressure on himself and Justin Herbert. So there's a lot more to it, obviously, but in short, it's about making conflicts happen on the defensive side by making small things all look the same, manipulating their defensive rules using the motions, and yeah, just manufacturing open receivers, which is something Ryan, Chargers fans have never seen, really.
Ryan, is it also like a core tenet of the Shanahan run game? It's that stretch run game, so it's quite and the running back picks their hole. They have a lot more choice in where they're going. Is that kind of right? They're definitely, if the offensive line is running to the left, a lot of players will be running to the left, and then there's a chance for Amarian Hampton, whoever we've got, is to pick their spot and go. Is that kind of one of the core tenets as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not so much stretch. They do run stretch, but it's basically every Shanahan system is based out of either wide zone or inside zone. And McDaniel runs wide zone as a principle with a lot of crack toss. So this is attacking the edges. So this is where Vidal and Hampton come into their own, and why I think it's a good fit, even if it's not a perfect fit. And you're right, they will have a lot more autonomy to cut back, which suits Vidal. Not so much Hampton, however, I do have some optimism in terms of that department.
Also, Alistair licking his lips there with the criticism on Omarion.
I know. My mind is still just absolutely scrambled by that Burger King comment from whoever that was.
That got me.
Thanks for throwing that up on the screen as I was mid comment.
That was a very good one.
Very good.
Ryan, you also said something about you saw some similarities between McDaniel and Minter in terms of modularity. What did you mean by that?
So, as I said, that he takes the complexity away from his players by giving them smaller tasks that they can interchange. So he gives like route families. So he has two routes called bang and drift, very, very similar run. They're basically quick digs, but he'll basically in the play call literally have a formation, the primary concept, and within that primary concept they know they have to run one of those two families depending on the formation. So the receivers can listen to like one third of the whole play call and know everything else they need to know. So it's teaching concepts through small modules rather than a Sean Payton offense where everyone has to know every single part. And the big thing is when you're coaching, you think that it's like, yeah, but then they don't know what the guy next to them is doing. It's not, because they practice meticulously the same concepts over and over from all different formations. It's exactly the same as what Minter does and McDonald. They do stations in their practice. They run the same pressure packages from different formations, and it will be every player doing every role within that. So it sort of ties those concepts together. They are very different, obviously different sides of the ball. One's proactive, one's reactive.
Rad. All right, guys. Chris O'Leary, new defensive coordinator. Bit of a name that shocked us with some of the names that were bouncing around and that we'd interviewed. Al, he's returned. Spent last year at Western Michigan and did some good stuff. They won the MAC Conference Championship. What do you think about this hire? Excited?
Yeah, I think one thing that always makes me happy is when you see the player response. I don't think the players lie, right? We saw that at the end of that game, not a lot of love for Greg Roman in the post-game locker room comments from Zion, from Bozeman, and Popper on his podcast with Alex Insdorf. I'm not sure if Alex is on the stream, basically said, you don't know the stuff they were saying that I couldn't write about. So that was quite instructive. Similarly, as Minter's left, you saw this effusive praise from the Bolt family, from the players online, and we're seeing that same thing with Chris O'Leary. You had Tahib Still, Derwin James, Tony Jefferson saying he's one of the best coaches he's ever had. So I thought that was my first takeaway. Okay, the players are excited about this. And then you saw he went and took Western Michigan, I think, from a team that ranked 107th in college football in points allowed to 9th in the FBS. So that's some like objective indication that he knows what he's doing. I found that he's the only, according to our searches anyway, he's the first defensive coordinator hired since at least the year 2000 who's only had one season of total NFL experience. So, Jack, that's something a bit different. Does that? How do you feel about this hire? Young guy, obviously.
The biggest issue that I thought of losing Minter is this continuity. You know, Ryan, you talked about modularity. Alistair, you picked up on that Minter's scheme is very modular as well. You know, you worry that a new person coming in, you know, has different verbiage, different language, slightly different rules, things like that. But clearly this is almost like a plug and play. Now, is he going to be as talented as Minter in terms of perhaps the leading? Who knows? But it seems to be the X's and O's are going to be the same. I think it's great. You know, like the one thing we wanted is continuity in that spot. And I think we've got it. Kyle, how are you feeling? Anything more you wanted to add? What did he teach? I'm pretty sure that the little tidbit is that he taught Elijah Molden the playbook in 3 days and he was able to go out and execute. You know, if that doesn't tell me what a great communicator this guy is, I don't know what does.
I think that what gets me excited about it, guys, is that it's following the same pattern that both John and Jim have used in the past. And it's that they like to, this is very Ravens-esque, both Jesse Minter and Coach McDonald from Seattle were over at the Ravens in, what was it, 2021. They left in 2022. They were both positional coaches in 2021. And then McDonald went to Michigan in 2022. Minter went to Vanderbilt. And they were both defensive coordinators there. And then right away, the Ravens brought McDaniel back in 2023, or McDonald back in 2023 to be their D coordinator. He excelled, got a head coaching job. Minter went to Michigan to DC there. And then Jim brought him into the NFL with him. So the Harbaughs apparently like to, if they have a strong, young positional coach that they see a very good future in, they say, we've taught you enough here. You need to go and lead the show somewhere for a year at another school, and we're going to bring you right back into the fold in a year or two. And that's what they did. And they've done this with O'Leary now. So I really believe O'Leary is going to be one of the next hotshot coaches. In terms of the scheme, Ryan, do you think he's going to be able to pick up and fill in for Minter pretty effectively? Or how much of Minter's success was the scheme versus his individual play calling?
Well, that's a tough question and hard to separate in terms of at least the metrics. But I think it's always a combination of both. The scheme can do so much. The play calling is absolutely essential to adapt, especially when things get tougher. And I think we've all seen that Jesse Minter is a fantastic play caller when games get tough. He's kept us in the playoff games way longer than we should have been based on our offensive output. I think from very early we could all tell he was destined to go beyond the Chargers. And I'm very, very thankful he has got an opportunity at a great organization as well, personal level. But I think he's a fantastic coach. In terms of how the scheme is going to translate, what I've watched of Western Michigan so far, it's completely different. But that's not to say that it will be different when he gets here. So, as I said, that Minter teaches everything in terms of modules. And you can start to see a little bit of the same modules, not if you look at Jesse Minter's regular season, but if you look at his preseason games, which is telling me that two things. Western Michigan, not much NIL budget. Not many 4 or 5-star recruits on that team. When you have less talent, you have to adapt to what your game is. And his game, like in terms of lesser talent, blitz heavy, yeah? Like 67% blitz rate, like absurd. They had the most sacks in the FBS, the most tackles for loss in the FBS, because he's just constantly sending everything. Behind that, he's playing cover three and cover one with disguises on each of them with a little bit of quarters mixed in there as well. This is similar to how Jesse Winter played against the Seahawks in 2024 preseason. He, I think it was a 58% blitz rate off the top of my head. And when you compare that, that's a bit more of what you see. Okay, there is an alignment. But in terms of what you what O'Leary has run at Western Michigan with such success, it doesn't exactly translate. I'm going to be so curious to see like that first preseason game. I watch them like Hawks.
Ryan, anyway. Maybe some of that as well is actually the other side. You're playing in the MAC. Offenses aren't very good. You play a single high safety, extra guy in the box. I kind of like that Harbaugh. I think he's decided that we've got the new meta in the league right now. We've got the Ravens scheme. You had opportunities to go with Sean McDermott or Jim Leonard or people who from different systems. I quite like Andy that he wants to at least retain what he sees as an advantage. We've got Derwin as the nickel. We've got guys who know this modular style. Chris O'Leary's coached it or at least been around it last year. So I'm at least hoping to see very much more of the same from O'Leary.
Sure. His experience with Jesse Minter goes back to the early 2010s. He was wide receiver at Indiana State. Minter was the DC and linebackers coach there. Then he moves into coaching roles at Georgia State, serving under DC, Jesse Minter. So, you know, that's 2015-16. And then he's gone to Florida Tech, to Notre Dame, and moved away from it a little bit. So there's overlap and...
Well, Florida Tech, he was under Rick Minter.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be there, and I don't think he's going to move too many of the parts around, but have his own twist on it. So for a guy with, you know, minimal experience, everything that I've read talks about how incredible he is at connection with players, with coaches, forming relationships, his ability to explain things to simplify them and get his message across efficiently. And he's got this ridiculously high motor and energy of enthusiasm, which is, you know, Harbaugh bread and butter. So it's very exciting for a young guy, and hearing him talk, he wears cleats to practice. So if he needs to jump in a route, I think he was caught on the mic saying that from his stint at the Chargers last season. But Ryan, interesting. You brought our attention to it a couple of days ago that a month ago, he'd just signed another contract at Western Michigan to continue on as the defensive coordinator. So that's another sort of thing that speaks volumes to what are the Chargers having to sort of pay the Western Michigan to leverage O'Leary out. And it's just one of those other investments that's the commitment.
Yeah, it's definitely a sign of their confidence in his abilities, and it matches what the players are saying about him, what director of football was saying about him at Western Michigan. Like, everyone is just effusive in their praise for him as a person. And Al's going to have to correct me on the pronunciation. Is it Nandame, the edge rusher from Western Michigan, said at the Senior Bowl, Alex Katzen, shout out Alex, caught him and asked him a few questions. Senior Bowl, and he was talking about how Chris O'Leary was teaching him this arm technique. Didn't say what, he just said arm technique. I'm like, tell me what. He was like, oh yeah, he was teaching me this, but as a defensive coordinator, to go down and be teaching your to be going down and teaching your exact technique to your defensive end, whilst also being, you know, overarching controller of the defense, is quite an admirable quality to have. And I think that's going to really resonate, especially when you're losing such a likable genius defensive play caller. So if you came in with a hard ass after that, it wouldn't be good, right? So to have the nice guy who's also happens to be really on his X's and O's is a really nice transition, in my opinion.
Nice. Hortiz, just quickly on last off-season moves before we start getting into our lessons learned from season 2025 with the Chargers. Hortiz learned from his lesson last year, and the first contractual move he makes is to lock in Taya Tart, 3 years, 37.5, I think, with 20 guaranteed. And I think he really came into his own and led that defensive front unit, especially in Khalil Mack's four-game absence. Disrupting the line speed and power off, you know, and early rundowns, and a lot of batted passes. So really awesome to see that that move was made. Alex, g'day. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, what do you guys think? anything else before we get into our lessons? Guys, Jack, anything else to note? No. Ryan, do you want to kick us off? What are your lessons learned from season 2025?
Ooh, right. So the first one, I thought I'd just go big to start. Fun conversation. Mike McDaniel said something in his press conference that I thought was very interesting. He said that coaches can't plan further down the line than 1 year in front of them. I inherently disagree with that based off of what I've seen from Harbaugh. I think 2026 has been the plan since day one. And I think that everything they've done has been reflecting that. Now, I'm not saying he's got some master plan, like he lost the right games by making bad decisions and so he could get this draft pick. Of course he didn't. He tried to win every season, but he did it in a certain way. You know, when Roman was appointed, most people say he's a good transition guy. And that's exactly what they're saying for the Jets job there now. They're like, they stink. They need stability. He could be a good option for them. So the lessons I've learned is that just look to the signs of the investment. They did not invest as heavily as they last year as they should have done. We had like 20 million spare cap space, and I was screaming, why are we not spending this? We're actually going to make a run. And also, the Super Bowl's in LA this year, so it'll make Carl's trip a lot easier anyway. Never mind the rest of us, it'll still be the same flight. So my observation is that I think Harbaugh is smart enough to actually anticipate that. And I feel like I need to respect a coach that can have that kind of future planning ability within him. And, you know, everything else points to it. So I think this is the run and I'm going to embrace that. That's my sort of lesson this season. Awesome. Anyone else? Go, Jack.
Do you want me to, I can go to one of my lessons, I guess. Is that how we're doing this, Andy, I think? Sorry, yeah. I missed the rest.
If you've got anything to add on to it, for sure. Or if you disagree with Ryan, throw a challenge flag, man. Whatever you want
to
do.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with anything that Ryan has said. I think my first lesson after 2 years with Harbaugh is that standards show up when you're tired or when you're going through something challenging. So we quickly forget after the playoff losses where we score a cumulative, 10 points, whatever it is, across two wildcard games. We scored a bit more than that. But I definitely think that no matter what, you can't question whether the culture of this team internally is very strong because, you know, 11 wins this year. The one thing that I will say is that in this where the standard is, and Alistair, I'm going to ask you a question, is that I think culture wins games to a point. However, I think situational football is still the curriculum. So which situation do you feel throughout 2025 from a coaching standpoint, where do you think we got better? And where do you think we still need improvement? Now, I'm lobbing this ball to you because I know you love this topic from a head coaching game management place.
I was quite impressed with Harbaugh's, I would say his adaptability on some fourth downs. I know you'll find him on the more conservative end of the spectrum, but I did think, as the season went on and he started to get the pulse of his team, he had at least a mantra I started to understand. If you're in their red zone, okay, we're more likely to go for it. He doesn't like the fourth and ones around the 40-yard line. He prefers to punt or go for a long field goal. But as we saw in the wild card game, he does have this sense of aggression where if he thinks now's when we need to score, we just got to turn over, we get four shots at it from the 10. I actually do like where that heads overall. So I think that's one thing I was impressed by. One thing that I was thinking about that I'd like to see is improve, and I think the Mike McDaniel hire speaks to this. I think it's time to embrace more of a first down or more mindset. And by that, what I mean is I think right now Jim is a bit focused on time of possession and long drives. if you look at where we ranked this year, we ranked second in time taken per drive and fifth in most plays per drive. And I think the goal early in games is not really to milk clock and go on these long drives and wear them out. I kind of think establish a lead early in games. Your job's actually to score the ball, even if it's a two-play, 80-yard explosive. And that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about Mike McDaniel. I was looking at what the Dolphins did last year. They ranked They ranked 13th in first downs in 2024. They ranked 6th in first downs in 2023. If you look at us, we're 19th. We're 18th under Greg Roman. So I've worked that into my first lesson, Jack. Where I think we can get better is basically, like, you still have time for your 9-minute drive later in the game if that's what you need to do to hold on to a lead. But I think the Harbaugh style keeps games really close. It's going to make them a 3-point game late in the game, and that invites that luck or variance to intervene. So that's my first lesson. Let's be a bit more aggressive. Don't worry about second and short, third and short. Get that first down on first and 10 if you can, Kyle.
Yeah, yeah. I'd agree with that, Al. I think the thing that, sorry guys, told you late nights.
Sound like Macho Man Randy Savage. I like it.
I actually have honey over here on the side, and I'm going to down some as soon as I'm done talking.
Yeah, that's what Randy Savage had as well. It was always
but something that I really noticed this year that I keep going back to is we are very, very hard, and understandably so, on Ortiz for rolling out Bradley Bozeman for 2 years. And the constant criticism we've given is that it was a very center-friendly draft 2 drafts ago. Not as much last year, but just that he has overall passed up on a lot of centers. But now that we have 2 seasons of data, that center-heavy draft that everyone says we should have picked up a day 3 guy or late day 2 guy, none of them have. Does anyone know any of them that have panned out? Because when I looked at the draft picks that have picked,
I know Bonilini.
What was that?
Yeah.
I know Bonilini, the coach.
What round was he picked? In what year? Then the one that kept coming to mind was Bo Limmer for me, but he started in 2024 and then they bumped him out into a reserve role. He didn't do well. So maybe they missed on one guy, but overall I feel like they did let Greg attach his guy to him. And that was Bozeman. And at least they've corrected the mistake now with Greg. And I think they've tipped their, you know, cards, they tipped their hand a little bit that Bozeman's more than likely on the way out since we're in a scheme that he will never survive in. So if I totally agree with Ryan, I think 2026 was the year all along, and I am just praying to God that it's true and that they go out and get very aggressive at the center position, which is what I am expecting. Al, or let's go back to Ryan. Is there anybody that we don't know of yet? If it's not Linderbaum, which is what everybody is saying, but is there anyone available, draft or free agency, that you think might fill in that role?
I mean, Connor McGovern is the other guy who's like touted as like being a primary free agent. I've heard that Elgton Jenkins might come available. The Packers are having some cap trouble. I feel like he's going to become available. In terms of the draft, I've had a look at the first few guys on the boards and very briefly. And I'd say my favorite in terms of just his straight up tape and his fit in this scheme is Logan Jones from Iowa. He's awesome. But if I'm being honest, I feel like you go youth at guard, smart veteran at center. There are some beastly powerful guards in this class, and that's got kind of the Harbor style, but they're also super athletic, so they can do zone. Aaron Brewer would be amazing. Like, you know, that season was just absolutely incredible, and the coach that's obviously coming over to coach the Chargers, that's a fantastic, like, you know, alignment. Zach Fraser, I don't think is available, right? He's still under rookie contract. Mm-hmm. Guys, and then No, and there was one other free agent. I can't remember who it was, but yeah. In general, there are options out there. I think it's actually a good center class, but I don't think that's where they'll go. I think they'll go guards in the drafts, a veteran center.
Ryan, your specific guy that you just mentioned, you know, I've been talking about him for a while because I really, really like him. He's not projected to go day one or even day two.
No, right I saw now. That, which is surprising
he's,
to me.
He's so, undersized. Yeah. They say he's undersized. He's more of a, you know, zone blocker. They don't see him as a fit in all schemes, right? He's scheme specific. So with that being the case, how would you feel about them pursuing one of those free agents? Linderbaum would make way too much sense in this situation, and still drafting a Logan in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely back going twice at all three positions across the offseason. I don't think you could. We have five picks. I imagine at least one of those will be a trade down. You pick up an extra day three pick. That's what you do. You double up on a strength that you want to build. So it's a very smart strategy in my mind. Are we still on lessons learned? Yeah, or are we?
Yeah, I'm gonna jump in. I'm gonna go.
Yes, please.
I got attacked live last year for the vanilla bland efforts that I put in. So I want to channel the teach in a sense. It's called Joe Ortiz and the Offensive Conspiracy. Al will attest to my recent interest in historical conspiracies. And one or two recent ones that I stumbled across got me thinking about the OC change. McDaniel replaces Roman in what's shaping up to be a skyrocketing hope for the gear stick to hit third, fourth, and fifth gear in brisk succession in 2026. Roman stalled. He used the handbrake for hill starts and rode that clutch until it broke its hand and burnt out. But was it all bad driving? Did he get sold a dodgy set of wheels? And now he's left abandoned in no man's land, even if he ends up with the Jets, with no roadside assistance, an overhaul of the transmission, the running backs, with a new part that couldn't get through the entire journey and an old reliable drive shaft that broke before it was even put into service. Thank you, fireworks. The chassis, or the tackles, was out of action early, and replacements did not protect the critical components of the vehicle. The pricey bull bar, Becton, fell off, the windshield cracked, and the hood was regularly found on the ground as soon as the ignition was turned. So why were the twin exhausts muffled regularly? Was it just bad luck all this happened at once? Who sold him the car? Was it Jim? Maybe it was Joe. While bad luck could have played its part, Ortiz Motors gave Greg the keys to the demo model with 15,000 test-driven miles. So the question becomes, will he spend some of that house money on a better ride for the new driver? Re-engineer the chassis, replace the hood with a younger, sturdier one, and a windshield that would keep more than a highway bug out. Car dealership at its finest, provide the best vehicle for the best driver, and scam the fools. Welcome, Mike McDaniel. What are you going to get? So that's just essentially lack of ability to invest in the interior of the O-line and what it ended up with. You know, Herbert as the clutch and all the critical components of the car hit at a record rate. And now the off-season is upon us, and as we've spoken about drafting or acquiring a free agent center, how is it going to go, and how critical is it to the change in the offensive system? Questions that you don't need to answer right now, but I think that's going to be a big theme for me heading into season 2026.
Well, Mike McDaniel did speak to some of that. He said that he wants to take the pressure off Herbert, even though he is as talented as any quarterback in the league. So he understands his assignment is not to go, oh, I've got the shiny new toy. I'm going to, as you said, you know, ride that clutch until it breaks again, you know, until he ends up as Andrew Luck. No, he said, and I think that it's, even if he doesn't invest in the offensive line in the exact way we all hope will happen, you know, even if he gets a little bit distracted by that shiny fast guy in the beginning of round three, you know, trade up somehow. Even if that happens, the scheme itself will help protect Herbert as well. Give him those quick, easy answers, you know, get the ball out of his hands. As he said, what did he say? You're the fastest pass rusher is not as quick as an open receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I agree, though. It's time to invest in this car. And it's not a write-off. We've got some pieces. We don't need to buy a brand new one. I think we really... Sure. Now's the time. Make this a Jim Harbaugh-led football team by investing in that O-line. You already said, Andy, Herbert was hit the most in the NFL. 43% of his dropbacks, the guy is under pressure. We can fix him a little bit with scheme, as you say, Ryan, but I think this is the time where we help him out. If you look at the way our offensive linemen graded this year, everyone was below a 50 PFF grade, essentially, except for Zion and Joe Alt. If you look at how Hortiz has drafted, Jack, would you believe that of the 18 draft picks, only two have been spent on the offensive line? Five have been spent on wide receiver. So that's where we start, and I'll throw to you, Jack. We start with trying to make Linderbaum the highest paid player at his position in the NFL. Bang. And then first round pick, guard. I don't care. I've been watching a bit of Yone from Penn State. Let's fortify that front, and then we can figure out the rest of it later.
Yeah, is that a lesson, Alistair? Or is that, I don't know, where are we, yeah, where have we
gone? That's a lesson.
So fortify. I have another lesson. Sort of maybe I'll sort of try to piggyback onto that. And it's quite simple. I believe that Justin Herbert is the toughest quarterback in the NFL. And I think you've all been alluding to it. He's been hit the most. He's had a shocking front axle in front of him. Wheels are falling off. But the guy's never gotten out of the car. And he refused to get out of the car. And he's also beaten the media furor that happened 2 years ago when we lost in the wild card round where he wasn't good enough. Yes, there are still people that are attacking him, saying he's a social media darling. Lamar Jackson wouldn't get that. Rada, rada, yada, yada, yada. But the lesson that I've learned is that this guy is going to go out there and he's going to give 100% every time. Did I honestly believe that 3-4 years ago? Because if you look at his friend who's in Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, yeah, you can say that he's tough as well, but man, he's also spent a lot of time on the sidelines. I don't know how many quarterbacks are breaking a finger, getting a full cast on their hand and trying to take snaps under center a week later. Justin Herbert is the toughest quarterback in the NFL. But to tie into that big point you're all saying, that doesn't mean you, Andy, put down the accelerator, don't, you know, like shift. I've never driven a stick. There you go. There's an admission. I can't drive a manual. So you need to be really careful with the clutch.
These guys, shame on you both.
What about you, Kyle?
We drive our mum's car.
Oh, my gosh. It's gone. Hang on. Can I drive a stick? Yeah. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah,
I can. My first car was a stick. Yeah.
There you go.
Second car.
But I mean, you know, like, just look after him.
I might need to join the powder keg after this. I can't be associated with two non-stick drugs. Go ahead.
M32. Shocking. So you're right. Protect him. Don't rely on him. And it feels like Roman just relied on Justin Herbert to make explosive plays. I think the explosive plays are going to be coming with planning. We've all alluded to that with McDaniel. It's very exciting. But yeah, that lesson from me, Ryan or Alistair, I'll go to you. Where am I going? I don't know where I'm going. Someone take it. But Justin Herbert is a heck of a tough guy. And I just think that grittiness to win, that's a bit of Harbaugh. And you mix that with the high IQ with McDaniel, it's going to be super exciting.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, my lesson learned is that Herbert is essentially just adding on that. Herbert is human after all. And as we saw, he bleeds red blood a lot from that elbow. Would you just clot kindly? I'm sick of the camera panning to Justin Herbert's bleeding elbow. But he can't do it all on his own. And I think one of the biggest sort of realizations is that Greg Roman tried to do what he wanted to do without what he needed. And that was the big, not having the tackles and all that sort of stuff and it not working out on the interior. And it was a big detractor. And, you know, it's, as you said earlier, Ryan, it's heading into Andrew Luck areas if that is a consistent thing. There's no long-term success when your quarterback is being hit 129 times and sacked, including the playoff game, 60 times. He lost three total football fields of sack yardage across the season. Like 320-odd yards. That's utterly ludicrous. And yet the team still goes 11-6. which is just absolutely wild. You see those numbers as a box stat and you'll expect to see 2 and 14, whatever, 2 and 15. So, yeah, just hoping. All the negativity around what happened with the offense and the offensive line and the scheme and stuff is, it's really exciting to have the horizon be Mike McDaniel doing what he's going to do and how all of that, we're hoping, changes so drastically.
Just I've got one off the back of that, actually. So one of my lessons learned is that the playoff loss and the nature of it has actually proven that Harbaugh's approach to getting confidence up in Justin Herbert as a primary driver of his efforts across the season were right. And then I think the changes off of the back of that loss have come as the realization of, it doesn't matter what I pump into this guy, how much confidence I instill in him, it won't be enough if the team's not open. You know, it's not that kind of game anymore. The 2000s, you could get a quarterback to just win games on their own. Like, defenses were pretty static. Like, they had hard hitters. Of course they did. You know, some of those defenses were fantastic to watch, so entertaining. But they don't touch the complexity of today's defense. And I feel like Harbaugh has made that realization off the back of going, we got this guy, Madison Beer. I've hit him on the shoulders a lot. I tell him he's the greatest quarterback there ever was. That is still not enough. God, I actually have to do some work here.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And yes, he did get in Madison Beer. Facts, yeah.
Hey, Jack, I'll bring you into this. It's a similar question. This is the only one that's maybe, I don't know if I believe this, but it's something I've been thinking about. The question is, does having a CEO head coach like Harbaugh actually make it too difficult to win a Super Bowl in the modern NFL? So I've looked at the 14 playoff teams. Most of the guys who've made it to the end, their head coach is a play caller. The only one who really isn't is Vrabel, because he's not calling the plays on defense, but he has before. He knows how to call plays. We're seeing, if your head coach is not a play caller, you're having to lose guys on both sides of the ball pretty often. I think on defense, you get a max of 2 years if they're really good. On offense, you probably get 1 year if they're really good. Is it possible to win with a Harbaugh-style head coach in this NFL?
That's a very, very good question. I mean, I was actually going to ask when we were talking about O'Leary, what do the playbooks stay as sort of IP of the organization, or are they allowed to take them and change them? So it's a bizarre, because that sort of popped up in my mind. Like, you know, the style of play, does the coach come in and can they pick up the playbook that was last year and they can make their adjustments? They get the same language, or does it move on? So, listen, I don't think anything in the modern NFL is beyond a CEO head style coach. McVay, you know, let's look at the other side of the coin from Harbaugh to McVay. I would call possibly the best head coach offensively we have in the league. You know, he was trying to find a quarterback that could do it. So, you know, then you go, all right, well, you know, you've got an amazing offensive mind. You're going to need a quarterback to match him. Goff couldn't do it. And so, you know, they sent him to Detroit. And then all of a sudden you're just trying to find a quarterback, because you've got this amazing play caller, but the quarterback's not good enough. So I think it's 6-1, half a dozen of the other. But I guess that's where the CEO head coach is all about, creating that culture, that environment of performance. I mean, is Andy Reid still calling plays? Possibly. Is he still calling plays? So I don't know. It is a tough one, and it's a worthy of discussion. I just don't think that in the NFL, with so many things moving and this new style, new ways of doing stuff, Harbaugh has shown that he's willing to change and shift. You know, the old CEO head style coach would be, nah, this is the way we do it. I need people who believe in what I do, and this is what I'm going to do. If anything, he's kind of just the curator of what's going on. Now, for someone like McDaniel, that could be incredible. For these young guys, it could be incredible, because what you're getting is the best of the best at that stage, because they know that they can then go and become a head coach. So I would rather something like that, because when people are invested in their careers, they're not just sitting there going, well, do I have a job next year or not? It goes, what I do matters. I have a voice. I have a say. I still think you're getting the best out of your organization. And that kind of culture is able to perhaps alleviate or sort of plaster over the fact that you've got a little bit of turnover. That's how I'd look at it.
That's a great answer. Yeah. There's no real right answer, right? And we're now in a league where people raid you, no pun, quicker than you, when they ever have. They see one coach is really good one year and they're interviewing him for head coach jobs. Maybe anyone else wants to jump in.
Oh, Andy. Sorry. No, yeah. I will. I've just seen a comment. I just thought it was really important that perhaps the synergy between the GM and the head coach is more important there, because you've got to get the same types of players. There's that discussion. There's continuity. And Ryan, you said it absolutely correctly. You've got to plan not just for that year, but you've got to be thinking. So in some ways, you've actually got some, when you've got a CEO head coach, you've actually got longitudinal planning that you can have with that stability at sort of GM and head coach. I'll finish there because that was there you go. That was a really good comment.
And no, what I really what I like about this offseason too, gosh, this voice sucks. But what I like about this offseason too is that
it's sexy.
Oh, it's got that gravel.
It's gone from Macho Man to like Maggie Smith or something.
We're gonna have a rough night, guys. But they did both this offseason. We got to hire the hottest offensive coordinator that was in demand because he could call plays and, as Jim put it, be the head coach of the offense. But as the CEO head coach, he also apparently, without us knowing, was grooming his next defensive coordinator, right? Mm-hmm. So they identified a young up-and-coming talent, shipped him off to college, let him play call for a year, and brought him back the next year. That's one way of doing it, and they hired the top dog on offense. So it shows me he's not going to have any issue finding coaches, right? He's going to be able to be creative. I hope that we can do that same sort of thing that we did with O'Leary on the offensive side of the ball. But hey, if we can keep being a very attractive position for offensive coordinators because of the talent we have, and they know that they'll get to be the head coach of the offense, that's a plus for us.
I agree. And also, one thing I wanted to add is that it's always easy to highlight the hotshot offensive play caller or defense play caller when they're on the way up. Yeah, mm-hmm. The head coach CEO type comes into it on the way down when things aren't going great. Yeah, they can stabilize, they can control. If you've got the guys like Mike McDonald, he's not been through any adversity yet. Yeah, mm-hmm. When it comes to that, are people still going to be saying him, putting him in the same vein as Vrabel? Vrabel has come all the way up, all the way back down, is now way back up further than he's ever reached before because he's learned those lessons and he's been through it. If you have a play caller in that role, can they do that? There's only a very few examples. And by the way, they're all offensive side of the balls. There are no defensive side play callers that have had sustained success at the top of the game.
Yeah, I think the value of the, just because it blends in nicely with my last lesson, and that's the value around having a good CEO style coach is, whilst, and Al would argue if I were to say that Jim's in-game sort of decision-making, timeouts, yada yada, going for it on fourth downs, Al might contend by saying that across the board it's pretty good. Well, there's definitely some moments I have next to you on the couch where you're telling me for the next 20 minutes of playtime why that was a bad decision. So I have to sit there and take your opinion. And then when I don't respond, you pepper these guys in the thread about it and start another battle. That's just the way you like it. You're on.
We need to get our fourth down bot.
He hasn't been lawyering for 3 months. He needs some of it. Fourth down, yeah. But yeah. But what it does, it provides the introspection of, you know, how the coordinators are operating. When you're the play caller as the leader of the team and you've got to worry about all those decisions, sometimes not having the insight to recognize your own mistakes or decisions aren't challenged, or you don't receive the challenge that well. But what it also does is, and what it's been building towards, and we go to that, you know, brick by brick kind of philosophy that Harbaugh has, is that it's built a culture that, you know, in the 6-7 years since the team's moved to LA, they were really struggling to find their feet. And Jim's come in, and that has been the first sort of pillar of his regime, is to create this place that is bred for success and the development of coaches where, you know, you have this wunderkind Jesse Minter that goes off and now is the Baltimore Ravens head coach. But inside his coaching staff are people who can take the reins, even if they disappear for a year. They're building good people. And it shows. There was a week of fear for Chargers fans. It was labeled that, you know, Mike McDaniel was going to be the new OC, but nothing had been signed. He still had head coaching interviews. And then he cancelled with the Raiders because he recognised the culture. And although the personality fit isn't, you know, key and lock, it's enough. And it's built on the philosophy of football that Jim has and what Jim has shown to the league and to the NFL world, what he's created with this team. And it's unreal because Mike goes, I don't want to be a head coach. Maybe I'll stick out with this guy because I've still got stuff to learn. And everyone buys in on it. And it's magnificent.
There's a really, you know, and this is what I believe as a, you know, in terms of leadership and building organizations, that the sign of a healthy organization is that it's people go out into the world with your organization's beliefs or morals or you as a leader, you know, because they believe in what they're learning at your organization. They go out, they spread that knowledge, they go into other places and do what you've taught them. And, you know, we haven't even talked about that, the impact on players. So, you know, we do perhaps chastise Ortiz for letting Puna walk, but, you know, and they've signed Tart, which we, I don't think we got to, but we signed Tart. If you're creating this environment, not only for coordinators, hotshot coordinators coming up, coming down, coaches, people, but players might go, hey, listen, you know, Ortiz might have the clout to say, listen, dude, I'll only give you 2 years or a year, but if you're part of our team that's building success, you know, jump on the bus with us, maybe you'll have a really good year and you can then go and sign that 3-year deal that you're looking for. So it's kind of that, and I guess that's that continuity that you get with that CEO type. The more players and people that we get out into the NFL, I just think the better it is for the organization, even though it kind of sucks. But you need that. But that's only possible when you have that continuity CEO type head coach.
Yep. Any other lessons, guys? Al, Ryan, Kyle, you want to jump in?
No.
Lessons all learnt.
Protect the A gap. Protect the A gap.
Protect the A gap. Yeah, that's right.
Jeez, that would be nice.
This would be a 24-hour stream if we got onto all the things that needs fixing on the offensive line. All right, guys, let's sort of round out the show, end of season lightning round edition. So some rapid fire question and answers between the five of us. So just list who you're throwing the question at. We want fast answers only, guys, no big diatribes, which is mainly at me umming and ahhing about how to answer a question. So Al, do you want to kick us off, man? What do you got?
Man, who wants one? Who wants one? Jack, I can see you. All right. Tooley will become eligible for a contract extension in March, but the Chargers should not extend him until he has shown that he can excel in a scheme that isn't coordinated by Jesse Minter.
Nah, sign him. I think he's proven. He's the one thing that we said at the start of 2025 was that he should improve his pass rush. He's become a top five pass rusher. And I would argue that Jesse Minter asked him to do a heck of a lot because he only rushes 4 and hardly blitzes. So I would say that no matter, I reckon he's had hardly any help at all. Yes, he's had Mac and things, but he's been operating on a bit of an island sometimes. And he's also probably our best run defender on the edge. So I think no matter what, sign the guy. I think he's great. Ryan, here we go. I know you're a stat man. What is one stat that you're binning for the 2026 season?
Oh. Touchdown to interception ratio. Yeah.
Ooh, nice. Good one. Nice.
I won't explain it because I'm not allowed. So.
You are.
No, go on.
Absolutely. You look at
the quarterbacks who are in the dance. You know, they take shots. If you don't take shots, you don't win games. Aaron Rodgers had the best TDs, your interception ratio in the season. Justin Herbert last year had one of the best. It does. It means you're not taking the risk to win games in a game that's measured in explosives.
F them picks, says Ryan, channeling Les Snead.
All right, so yeah, I've got one. So, Kyle.
Hit me.
Tyreek Hill, yes or no?
Fuck no.
sorry, Pastor Dan.
Yeah, I will say, yeah, get something, yeah. Please. I wouldn't sign him with his ankle drop or whatever, foot drop or whatever they call it, even if he was healthy. We've got a good chemistry on our team. No, thank you. Pass. Alistair, you kind of already answered this, but I'm going to double down on it in case you want to shift from it being just guard specific. But you and I have gone back and forth on this a lot in the past. Is this a draft where at our current draft position, you would be okay with taking one of the first secondary positions at a certain position off a board, like a guard, the first guard off the board, the first tight end off the board, first safety off the board, since we have a lot of those, you know, primary positions already taken care of, like tackle, quarterback, wide receiver, edge rusher. Would you be comfortable now drafting one of those and getting first dibs on a center, guard, tight end, what have you?
Yeah, you've converted me actually quite a bit with your thinking around it. I think that's right. If you can take the best player at a position that's traditionally thought of as being low value, especially if you're picking in the 20s, right?
Yes.
Because then it's a choice between the best running back or the fifth best edge rusher. I see value in that. Now, I haven't really got deep in the draft class yet. And I do think edge is a position to watch because they are saying it's a deep class and we know we've got guys who aren't under contract. That's the only caveat. But otherwise, I'm on board with your philosophy. You're just too wise. I've definitely bought in. Andy, I'll throw to you now. Zion's market in free agency will get too expensive and he will not be a Charger in 2026.
Yeah. his market will be excessive. I think they'll pay it. I think he'll be a Charger next year. Yeah, I'm going to stick with that. I think Becton out, Bozeman out, two's Lester Phil. I think they'll commit to that.
Can I hop on that, Andy? Do you think they'll do it before free agency or after? Your call.
After. I think they'll see what happens with the Linderbaum, you know, the price tag there. And if that's not achievable, then I think they'll be probably more willing to commit to Zion. I also think that, you know, his athletic ability might translate a little bit better into McDaniel's scheme. So, yeah, I think he'll stay. The Chargers' biggest strength next year will be its running game.
Production, if we're looking at stats, I think so, yeah. This guy has always the top two explosive rush rate. I think we're going to see some crazy numbers in the running game. I think we're going to get a lot of I told you so's from Ryan, to me especially, when Hampton clocks 1,500 rushing, and I'm going to have to eat my medicine, and no doubt people will be resurfing those clips when I said it was negligent that we didn't trade down and took a running back. I'm ready for it, guys. I'm ready, TDO crew. Throw it at me. I think the running back position is set to go. Ryan, I'm going to throw to you. What is your biggest pet peeve about how defense is talked about by the media or fans?
No. It's a small one, but the fact that people think quarters means that four players play deep. That's the one that gets me. Quarters is a leverage scheme, and it's been, I think it just got named incorrectly at the very beginning, and it's got a bad rep off the back of it. You see analysts on ESPN First Take or whatever that terrible show is that HO took over. Oh, Jesus. That ratio for his tweet about Shedeur Sanders is the amazing. Worst thing I've ever seen. Yeah, in a week of, let's say, questionable news, that might be the worst thing out on the internet. I would go, Jack, would you re-sign Keenan Allen?
No. I would not re-sign Keenan Allen. I have a feeling KLS is going to have a lot more to do next year. I think Darius Davis is also going with, and I think QJ is going to have a different role. We're going to see all sorts of stuff. I just don't think Keenan Allen might be athletic enough and fast enough now to be that quick receiver in the game. Let me put a caveat on that. Depends how much money. I'll go with that. There we go. But if he's on the money that he is now, no, I want less money. Kyle, what do you think the most important boring skill in football is? The most important boring skill in football.
The most important boring skill in football.
That's a great question.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really
good... So I'm a teacher.
Yeah, it depends on the position. Like if I were to pick a boring skill for running back, I would say patience, right? No one wants to see patience until you see it really succeed and do well. So I think does that translate to other positions though? I'm thinking, the only other thing I could say is what was that, Ryan?
I think it does translate. You know, safety, they've got to have patience to sit on top of routes, and people see it as hesitant. So you're right. It's kind of seen as a boring one, and it's also really hard to learn.
Yeah. Patience would have to be the most boring one, sure.
Yeah.
I'm going somewhere like long snapping. Sorry to jump in.
I was going to say snapping the ball. Yeah, okay. Long snapping or snapping the ball.
You guys went somewhere different than me. My head, I was just like, being boring is a skill. As in, like, do not go out and get absolutely off your face.
I don't know.
Play drunk. Anthony Cromartie or whatever. Whoever it was. Yeah. I can't remember who it was now.
Yeah, good chance. Yeah, oh, I just went something that's like not kind of noticed, you know, you notice the kick and it's, you just expect that to be a done deal. Like the whole laces out every time, right to the hands.
Getting substitutions right, like getting substitutions right. And that's a big one, I think.
So if that's the direction you meant to go with that, that's my bad.
I would say even more
boring than that though, that we saw play out this year is the holder. Right?
Yeah.
Like you take that totally for granted, but then you say see JK plucking one out and planting it down. Right. You're like, wow, that's actually a really important skill.
It's the only reason he has a job.
Okay, guys, I got one for all of you. Okay. And we're going to play a little sign language with this one. We can all assume that everybody would sign Tyler Linderbaum for $18 million a year, right? Put your hand up if you would sign Tyler Linderbaum for $18 million a year. For 4 years, let's say. Okay, I'm going to keep going up. Drop your hand when you're done. $19 million a year. $20 million a year. $21 million a year. $22 million a year. $23 million a year. $24 million a year. Okay. So we're between 22 and 23. Great little exercise, guys, because even though people keep saying we just need to hop over Creed Humphrey at $18 million, the 17% of the cap share is what Creed Humphrey signed for at that time. And
that's what I meant, be boring.
Yeah. God, killing my momentum, master.
Sorry, Kyle.
So Creed Humphrey signed for a 7% cap share back then. And that's the highest centers have ever gotten. So you got to expect that that's going to be where they try to land moving forward. They're not going to drop too far off of that. I don't think it's going to take 18.5 or 19 million to get him. We'd be lucky to get him for 20 million. So 22 to 23, great exercise, guys. You guys are all right there. 7% would be between 21 and $22 million a year. So awesome. Okay, let me pull that. Notes back up.
Now, Kyle, I'll throw one to you since it's on the cap. So the NFL has informed clubs that it's projecting the 2026 cap to increase from $279.2 million to between $301 and $305 million. My question to you, this news actually disadvantages the Chargers given the Spanos family's approach to cash spending and relative wealth. Agree or disagree?
I don't agree or disagree with it because cash is the main constraint anyway. And teams can always work around the cap. It's the cap is it's just it's imaginary to some degree in a 1 year outlook, right? Where it gets a little bit better is, or where it gets more important is when you stretch it out over a few years. This is the third or I think every year since COVID's little, since our slide back with the cap from COVID, we've outperformed expectations. So in that stance, when you look at it in the long scheme of things, slight disadvantage, yes. But for this offseason, it shouldn't mean anything to us. The thing that matters is that we have much less cash obligations this year. Herbert's cash number drops from $60 million last year to $28 million. I think Rashawn Slater's was something like 38 to 16. So we have a lot more cash that we can deploy. Okay. So great question, Al. And let me, Ryan, to slide one over to you. We are kind of accepting that Mike McDaniel might be a 1 year offensive coordinator for us. There are some guys that you and I have talked about that are very scheme specific available in the draft that would do great in a Mike McDaniel offense. But would you be hesitant drafting those kind of guys knowing that we might only have him for a year or two?
I would not, because if you're going to make a Super Bowl run, you're going to make a Super Bowl run, right? And also, talented players should translate ski is translate to a degree. Yeah. Oh my God, that's such a comment.
Quit watching.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you've got to go all in, and also the guys that we're talking about in terms of their scheme specific in terms of running zone. For what we've talked about, that doesn't mean to say that they can't run gap. It's just that they haven't done it. So a lot of the time, although Logan Jones is undersized, so that's yeah. But at the same time, you can add mass. Look at Zion; he added what 25 pounds since his rookie year. So yeah.
Hey Ryan, can I keep you in the hot seat? Is that okay? I had a really specific question. Is with your coaching, what's harder to execute and coach, tackling in space or covering in space? I'm fascinated at your answer.
Covering. Easy. Yeah, I was a rugby player before I played American football. And so tackling came natural to me. And I think it's easier to teach. The Seahawks tackling drills on YouTube have tens of millions of views for reasons, because it's one technique and it works, and you can just extrapolate that at any level. And it's about safety, and it's about precise measures of technique. Coverage changes consistently, both pre-snap, post-snap. Your movement skills have to be precise. You have to be able to move backwards, diagonal, break on the ball. You have to be able to flip your hips and hip flexibility. So for those Americans on the chat that don't know, English people play too, American football. And I can tell you the one thing that we absolutely suck at is hip flexibility, because we just do. And there's no sport where you're like, oh, yeah, let me just open up my hips backwards and run that way. Like, or I need to move laterally along this line. We don't have any sports that do that. And it's the hardest thing to teach, in my opinion.
Cool. Thank you.
One for me. Al, are there any changes you would want to see to the defense under O'Leary?
Not schematic. I'm a really convert to the style that they play, not blitzing too much, playing mostly zone. I think that's good. Personnel, I think we need to upgrade at linebacker. I just, heading into this season, Henley, maybe you bank on him improving after what was a tough year on and off the field for him, injury and personally, but we haven't seen much from Colson. Do you really want to go into a season with him and Marlo Wax or Troy Dye? I don't know. So that's one area. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a draft pick there, round 3, or we sign a veteran free agent to replace Perryman. That's one place I'd like to see us improve. Good question. I've got one for each of you that's a quick hitter, like non-football, all right? One-word response. Kyle, craps or blackjack?
Craps.
Good man.
All day.
I love it. There's some context to that. He taught me and my wife how to play quickly, and we took his lesson off to the casino in Vegas and won a bit of cash. So thank you, Kyle. Ryan, Fawlty Towers or Blackadder?
Blackadder. I've never watched Fawlty Towers. My dad has, but okay. Not me.
Oh, criminal. Yep. Great show. Jack, Stranger Things or Succession?
Succession.
Okay. And Andy, was Lee Harvey Oswald the sole shooter of JFK?
No.
No. Wrong answers only. All right.
Yeah. Not the only one. It's my professional take.
Andy, I've got one. Oh, sorry.
Please go.
Andy, what fan behavior should be banned?
Men over the age of like 45 wearing jerseys and like big headpieces holding defense signs, all of that kind of stuff. Face painting on adults, that should be banned for me. Wild. That's going to cause some kerfuffle, but come on, guys, grow up. Ryan, Madison Beer's relationship with Justin Herbert will not outlast Jim Harbaugh's relationship with Justin Herbert.
Ooh, no, Jim Harbaugh is a Catholic. He does not believe in anything, any kind of severance at all. So, yeah, it would definitely be he will outlast Madison Beer.
What does he say? You play until you have to coach, and then you coach till you die. Yeah, die by Herbert's side.
He actually will.
Yeah, gospel, I did. And Broncos ones. I saw some horrible, horrible kits.
Right. Jack, give us your score prediction for the Super Bowl.
Oh, score prediction for the Super Bowl. I think it's 21-17 Seahawks.
Nice.
Quite low score.
21-17 Seahawks. Yep. Who haven't asked a question? Alistair, I...
Yeah, I was going to point that out. Great call, Hannon Dairy.
All right. I saw him at that rally the other day, and I thought he's committed to life.
Or did she divorce him? Might have got sick of the khakis. Who knows?
Alistair, okay, here we go. You mentioned it before, or you've alluded to it, or you've talked about it. Blitz heavy or disguise heavy? Which would you prefer?
Disguise heavy. Yeah, that's my go. Cool. I think it's, yeah, when you've got a good team, too much risk with the blitzing. You get hit with the explosives. Be targeted. Use them on third downs. All right. Do we want to keep going with this, or I can share a couple listener questions we've got?
Let's do this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's go. Let's end with a couple of those. We've got, I'm going to share four of them, all right? One for each of you guys. Maybe Andy, you can take this one from Louis De Bruyne. Hope I've pronounced that correctly. Darius Davis on the team next year. Looks like he lost his explosiveness and the new rules seem like they don't suit him.
Completely agree. I don't really see a spot for him. His agility laterally on returns was horrible. He was being chased down by special teams, tight end fours. I don't think the new rules suit him. And I don't think he plays with that much visible effort. His use in the offensive system might improve under McDaniel, but I think there's better guys, KLS for one, to do that sort of gadgety motion stuff. So, yeah, agree with that.
Thank you, Louise. This one to you, Jack. This is from at Bolts Baby. Do we think the Zion to center experiment could make a comeback?
So, because I was wondering, you know, if you move Zion to center, does that mean you have to pay him as much as well? Perhaps he's got a less of a price tag, but I'm not too sure on that. Maybe not. God, that's a good question. My gut feel is no. My gut feel is that they go out and either draft or they go and get Lindeball. That's my gut feel. Thanks, Bolts, baby.
Kyle, this
just
is
quickly,
from
Al. Big thanks to at Ben Huber one. Phenomenal input in the chat today.
Yeah, he's been great.
Thanks
We've
for joining us.
Very good
very
comments.
Fun.
Great.
And Louise to Bruin, as in UCLA Bruins, no?
The Boston Bruins. Kyle, see, this is from at Goss Bull. Choose your edge rusher. OA, Hendrickson, or Crosby?
OA all day. And not because Max Crosby is less talented. I would, of course, go Max Crosby if he was just there and available to sign. But I'm not giving up all of our draft capital for him. To give away.
I meant just rank him.
Oh, no, no. to me, it looks like choose your edge rusher. And to choose Max, we would have to give them at least two first-round picks. So the thing that made the OA trade so sexy was it took away our need to panic draft an edge in the first round if we extend him. So extend him, keep him in-house, and go from there. But, yeah, if we had to rank him, I would just reverse it. Max, OA, I'd probably still do over Trey because Trey's getting a little older.
That'd be here I was, Kyle, thinking you'd want OA to go off to Minter, and then we can get Alohi back now that he, Notre Dame's Chris O'Leary is in the chair, but you surprised me. All right, last question. This is for you, Ryan. Question's from Hanan, friend of the show. If these three are available, who do you draft in round one? Kenyon Sadiq, tight end. Yone, the Penn State interior offensive lineman. Fork, I think, is the edge rusher from Auburn. I haven't got to it yet, but they're the three.
Yeah, I haven't got to Fork yet, but Ione's tape is so impressive. And he can do it all, literally. So he's not a perfect player. Very rarely are. But it's a position of need, and he's strong and fast. It's just a perfect fit.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Well, I think that sort of rounds out today's show. Kyle and Ryan, thanks heaps for staying up late on your Saturday night and joining us through sickness and health. The two Powder Keg boys do some awesome stuff of their own, so make sure you check their stuff out. Guys at the YouTube comments, thanks heaps. Laughed a lot. Had to mute my mic a lot because that was some outlandish stuff. It was really, really good banter. Guys, we're going to take, for the TDU crew, we're going to take most of February off. And, yeah, that's brutal. We're going to take most of February off before we ramp into free agency primer, before the new league year starts, and then obviously into draft content. So let's enjoy some off-season, hoping that the Seahawks can get the job done against the Patriots. 21-17 is wild, Jack. I think it's going to be 30-10 for mine, for the Seahawks. I think it's going to be a smockin. Retribution for 2014. Let's not pass the ball on first and goal. or whatever. But yeah, thanks all for joining. We'll take a bit of time out, and we'll catch you next time on the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Hooroo!
See you guys.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!